You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
Feb 4, 2021, a couple of stories here that might kind of just slip by in the mess of all the other news. I want to make sure I bring them to your attention. This one, listen up, please. The CDC, latest order, requiring individuals to wear a mask when using public transportation or inside transportation hubs, such as an airport, a bus station. If you're not wearing a mask, you're going to face problems. And here's the key point. It could be enforced by federal authorities. Federal authorities. We'll wait and see what happens with that. In the meantime, Joe Biden is talking about maybe we need to mail out and give away face masks. Just give them everywhere. Give them out to everyone. The White House is, quote, considering sending masks directly to American households. Unclear when they'll go into public, how many would be included per residence, whether disposable or made of cloth. Just we're to that point. House impeachment managers are requesting Donald Trump testify at his upcoming Senate impeachment trial. Yeah, they want him on the stand. Said, we want you to provide testimony under oath. Not clear how Trump will respond at this point. The House is, at this point, not saying it's going to subpoena Trump. Just shortly earlier, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, stood on the House floor in her first speech as a freshman from Northwest Georgia. Said, I'm just a regular American. Some words I said in the past do not represent me now, nor my district, nor my values. When she was in Georgia in the past, she had followed on Facebook some things with the QAnon group and sometimes pushing a little like button, and you got members of the Democrats who want her removed from any committees. She's been assigned the Committee on Education and Labor, House Budget Committee, and they want to penalize her and to remove her because of those past statements. These were statements she made before she became a member of Congress. But Maxine Waters and Senator Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and others of their ilk, Ilhan Omar, and the remarks they made while being already members of Congress, things they have said, nope, nobody's questioning them, except us, of course. And don't forget, they wanted to get rid of Josh Hawley and Cruz. They wanted to kick them out or expel them or do something with them because they were among those leading the recount question in the Senate in certifying the electoral votes. Josh Hawley's campaign says now it raised more money when they were objecting to the Electoral College certification than in any other month since October 2018. I love it. There are billboards along some sections of St. Louis Interstates, by the way, his home state of Missouri, saying he should resign. But they brought in something like almost $1 million in the month of January. Average donation, $52. Justice Department, by the way, says it might go for RICO charges against those accused in storming the U.S. Capitol. Oh, and speaking of challenging votes, since the Republicans are so nasty when they do it, what are they saying about Mark Elias? He's an election lawyer. He's challenging some votes in a congressional race in upstate New York, saying the machines were faulty. He's not a Republican. He's a Democrat. What are they going to say then? And you got Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot warning the teachers union again. Enough is enough. We must reopen public schools. Enough is enough. Well, she's done that previously. And they've just kind of thumbed their nose at her, so kids still are not in school. The union says, we're not going back. Oh, by the way, congressional Democrats We want to make sure every newborn American gets a $1,000 savings account. The kind of a baby bond, they will call it. Before we're done with it, they'll be offering baby bonds for those aborted. And Hunter Biden is moving forward with a book to be published here in April, focusing on his history of substance abuse. According to the White House press secretary, President Biden supports his son's recently announced book titled Beautiful Things. Simon & Schuster will publish it. Yes, you're right. You're right. That's the same one that dropped Senator Josh Hawley for his book deal because he questioned the votes.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. My sponsors keep this program on the air. So my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Bill Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
All my friends know the low rider. The low rider is a little higher.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I think most people in the country think it's bizarre, you know, that it's just completely bizarre and unfair that people, and you're going to run the Department of Education, you've got no problem with it. That concerns me. And I think it's this kind of thing is going to lead to really just the vast majority of America just wondering, who are these people that think it's okay? From what planet are you from?
Excellent question by Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. In questioning Biden's education secretary nominee, Miguel Cardona, from Connecticut. He served as the Connecticut Commissioner of Education since 2019. And he's already winning praise from Senators Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Arkansas, Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, for his commitment to work with them on issues facing rural schools. But neither one really indicating how they're going to vote on the nomination itself. But I will remind you that in 2017, they broke with the Republicans and they oppose DeVos confirmation. But here's a guy that would be Secretary of Education, employing thousands, an annual budget of more than $60 billion. Pressing job, most pressing, would be able to get up schools open. But the other part of the thing that Rand Paul was challenging him on, because this is one of these guys that believes or will not be clear where he stands on the issue of transgender athletes participating in sports corresponding to their chosen identity, not their biological identity. And in fact, in his very state, in Connecticut, Miguel Cardona, in his state, in 2020, that Department of Education Office of Civil Rights told Connecticut that allowing biological males to participate in girls' sports violated the rights of female students. And Paul's trying to find out, if you're confirmed, are you going to enforce that kind of ruling. And again, this is a case right out of Cardona's home state. It involves some female students who brought a complaint, then a federal lawsuit arguing against the policy which allowed transgender students to participate in sports. The girls complaining, "We lost out on finishing top positions in track and field and possible scholarships because some of those who were competing as girls were biologically male and had physical advantages." And they say not only did we lose that, but then we lost the ability to help our school. But the two transgender students did help their school win championships. So I want to let you hear an extended part of the exchange between Senator Rand Paul and the education nominee Miguel Cardona on this transgender issue. And we're going to let you hear a much longer bite, uninterrupted by me, than we normally do, because I want you to get the full feel and flow of the ebb and flow of the questions and noncommittal answers, basically just finding a way and a loophole to step around. Just listen. Here we go.
I think that it's critically important that education systems and educators respect the rights of all students, including students who are transgender, and that they are afforded the opportunities that every other student has to participate in extracurricular activities.
Does it bother you that, like, the top 20% of boys running in track meets beat all of the girls in the state, and that it, you know, would be, you know, completely destroy girls' athletics? The girls are being pushed out. They don't make the finals in the state meet. They don't get college scholarships. That it's really detrimental to girls' sports. Do you worry about having boys running girls' track meets?
You know, I recognize and appreciate the concerns and the frustrations that are expressed. As Commissioner of Education, have had conversations with families who have felt the way you just described it, and families of students who are transgender. So I understand that this is a challenge. I look forward to working with you and others to.
Do you think it's fair to have boys running in the girls' track meet?
I think it's appropriate for. I think it's the legal responsibility of schools to provide opportunities for students to participate in activities, and this includes students who are transgender.
So you don't have a problem then with boys running in the girls' track meet, swimming meets, name it. You're okay then with boys competing with girls?
Respectfully, Senator, I think I answered the question. I believe schools should offer the opportunity for students to engage in extracurricular activities, even if they're transgender. I think that's their right.
All right. Well, a lot of us think that that's bizarre, you know, not very fair. You know, I come from a family that has a lot of girls who have competed in college athletics, have been state champions, and frankly, you know, some boy that's 6'2" competing against my 5'4" niece doesn't sound very fair. I think most people in the country think it's bizarre.
And I think he's right. And there are even Democrats who have that opinion. We'll get to that point in a moment. Do you remember the whole purpose of federal law regarding title programs to make sure that girls got the same kind of money and effort and support that boys' programs did? The whole idea was to level the field with Title IX. They just wanted to make it the girls would be on an equal par with the boys. And that was a great idea, especially if you had daughters or you at that time were in school competing. I mean, all the money went to the boys and girls got nothing. So now we've done that. We may be. But now we got this push to have boys, born biological boys, realize I can't really compete against the other boys in the track team. So I need to become a member of the girls' track team, and I can compete and win there. Some of them can, some can't. There's some women who could still outrun the fastest boy in the school anyway. But as we said a moment ago, what jeopardizes things? The case that was brought in Connecticut, in the very same state, Miguel Cardona was girls saying, "We lost an opportunity or maybe scholarships." Does that seem right? Because for those who think it's okay, then what are they going to do when someone comes forward that was a boy transgendering to a woman and then decides to do some additional changes that would make them superior to anyone? I thought the whole idea was to have inclusivity. But we know that's not true with the left. It's not that. They don't want inclusivity unless you're already part of their team and what they want. Otherwise, they are for exclusivity to cut you out. Senator Rand Paul again as he continued his questioning of nomination education secretary, to be nominated, I should say, Miguel Cardona.
I wonder where feminists are on this. I wonder where the people who supported women's sports are on this. I mean, we all going to be okay with hulking 6'4" guys, you know, wrestling against girls, do it, you know. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And so I think the fact that you seem to be afraid to answer the question, or you basically do answer the question by saying it's okay without saying it's okay, really is a statement to a real problem we have, and a disconnect between what middle America and what most Americans actually believe. I even think most Democrats don't believe girls should run in the boys' track meet. Boys should run in the girls' track meet. So I'm disappointed in the answer.
Disappointed in the answer, and that's being mild and peaceful. But inside, I'm burning up about it. I'm absolutely angry that that's where we want to go with this nation. No, it's not where we want to go. You heard Senator Rand Paul mention, I wonder where what the feminist groups think and so forth. Where are they in this? Well, I have a piece here in front of me that high-profile female athletes and women's sports advocates are hoping to enact federal legislation that would protect women and girls' competitive sports by limiting the impact of Joe Biden's executive order. That executive order he signed, one of those he quickly signed, is dubbed the mandates the inclusion of transgender athletes in sports. Inclusion of transgenders in sports. And it's dubbed the Preventing and Combating Discrimination on the Basis of Gender Identity or Sexual Orientation. So now this group is trying to propose federal legislation to codify protections for girls and women from competing against biological-born men in sports. Women's sports leaders, I referred to some of this yesterday, tennis legend Martina Navratilova, several Olympic gold medalists, 5 former presidents of the Women's Sports Foundation, all asking Congress and the Biden administration to limit participation of transgender girls and women who have experienced all or part of male puberty, which is the scientific justification for separate sex sport, while accommodating and honoring their sports participation in other ways. That could be separate heats. All the transgender boys are running now. Additional events. But the executive order, they even acknowledge, remain fuzzy, hard to understand. We know what the end result will be if we continue going down that. A Title IX attorney, one of the leaders of the Women's Sports Policy Working Groups, in an interview with USA Today said, competitive sports, however, are akin to pregnancy and medical testing. These areas require a science-based approach to trans inclusion. Our aim has been on protecting the girls and women's competitive categories while crafting accommodations for trans athletes in sport wherever possible. So they're trying to say, we're going to support you, Biden, but you basically have got to do it in a way that it doesn't damage and harm young women. You also heard Rand Paul say, I think a lot of Democrats would ask the same question I did earlier about what planet are you from? You're out of touch. Well, I got a perfect example of that for the senator. This is Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, Democrat of Ohio. She is the longest-serving woman in Congress. And in a recent interview, she said, "I'm struggling. I'm struggling with a growing sense of alienation within the Democrat Party." She's trying to fight for her largely working-class Midwest constituents. She said, "Our party is increasingly dominated by representatives from wealthy, often coastal districts." She said, "They can't understand what we're dealing with here. They can't understand a family that sticks together because that's what they have. Their loved ones are what they have. Their little town, their home, as humble as it is, that's what they have." And she said, "I think it's very hard for regions like mine, which have had great economic attrition, to get a fair standing." She said, "As a Democrat, I represent a working class district, and I feel like a minority within my own party." In fact, she pointed out on congressional district data that showed 19 out of 20 of the nation's wealthiest districts are represented by Democrats. She said, "Several of my colleagues who are in the top ranks have said, you know, we don't understand your part of the country." And she said, "Of course you can't. You can't understand what you haven't been part of. You lost touch with the blue collar." If you remember in the remarks following the November election, when the GOP defied expectations, made gains in the House, Congressman Kevin McCarthy stated, "This election cycle made one thing clear. Republican Party is now the party of the American worker." But Democrats right now hold a lot of purse strings. So you think they could get schools open? Not in Chicago.
Story of the hot rod race with the Fords and Lincolns was setting the pace. That story is true. I'm here to say I was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor in it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I should let you know now that before we wrap this hour, here's a warning for you. I'm warning you now so you can't say you never saw it coming. I'm warning you now that before we wrap this hour, I'm going to say something that will be, in today's world, politically incorrect. And I expect that many of you are going to get angry when you hear it. I expect some of you are going to maybe laugh. But you've been warned or told. Before we wrap this hour, I will say something absolutely in today's world is politically incorrect. And that was not too long ago, not that long ago, that we were laughing every time we heard it. All right, that's coming up before we wrap the hour. Let's turn our attention, as I said, to opening schools in Chicago. First of all, Texas Senator Cornyn had pointed out the other day, he said, Joe Biden's going to have to choose between science or teachers' unions on reopening the schools, because the CDC has said you can open the schools. There's no reason you can't open them now. They've said that repeatedly now. Even Dr. Fauci has said it. And for all the left who tell us, believe the science when it comes to global warming, they don't want to believe the science at this point, at least not teachers' unions. And I feel for a lot of teachers that are caught up in those unions, they don't have a lot of control. They can't speak out for themselves, and they're basically having to do whatever they're told. Well, the Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot trying to get the nation's third largest schools to reopen. She said, "We have students suffering already, failing grades, depression, isolation. We cannot afford to wait any longer." She said, "I want to emphasize remote learning works for some. It obviously doesn't work for everyone, not by a long shot." So she's been after the union, "Help us out." And she even threatened, made a threat. What did the Chicago Teachers Union do? No, not going to. Not going to, because until we get COVID-19 vax for every members and allow work-at-home accommodation for employees with medical risk, primary caregivers, we're not going to do it. We cannot return to in-person program, in-person instruction. You know, if you have some members like that inside the union, well, then carve things out like that. But otherwise, not everyone's like that. You are to be teachers before you became unionist. The union can do some good for the teachers. It has in the past. as all unions can be good, but then they also can be a weight around the neck and out of the pocketbook of those who are members. The mayor's stating again, we got to open it. We got to get these schools open. For the sixth time in a little over a week, the public schools told parents, keep your children home for remote learning. We're not getting anything going. It's not happening. And so Democrat Mayor Lori Lightfoot is facing off against other Democrats who are with the teachers' union. And they were threatening to lock the teachers out. That was a threat, and that's what it was, is a threat. So the union says, we're winning. We don't need to do anything. And all those kids that need an education, need social connections, that need somebody to see how their welfare is, tough, just tough right now. While we're speaking about Chicago, there's still a battle for the Obama Presidential Library to be built where they're putting it. A lot of folks still don't like it. Stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
And I think it's gonna be a long, long time. Touchdown brings me round and get to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. Rocket man.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Today, with the conclusion of a careful federal review process that spanned several years, we're ready to get to work. Through this process, we've shown that our plans for the Obama Presidential Center, including new gardens, playgrounds, walking trails, and bike paths for all to enjoy, won't just preserve historic Jackson Park. They'll bring opportunity and breathe new life into the community we love.
Those are the words of former President Barack Obama about his presidential library, that he says we completed all the plans, everything looks ready to go. The plan, the federal review of it, got launched in November 2017. Apparently it's all completed, and now they're looking at breaking ground this fall. $500 million Obama Presidential Center. Mostly privately financed construction. They expect it to take about 4 years to complete. Taxpayers will pay about $175 million in related roadway changes, according to the Chicago Sun-Times. This project, even though it's Obama and in his home city, has faced complaints from the very South Side neighborhood where he grew up. Now, it's supposed to include a public library and other features. It apparently is not going to include any official presidential papers because I've seen different reasoning for it, but apparently he doesn't want to have to get wrapped up in dealing with archive material and things of this nature. But it will also have a public facility for track and field competitions that apparently is also going to be funded in part, at least, by a $5 million branding deal with Nike. A lot of folks don't like that either. Not uncommon for a president at some point to be honored with a presidential center or library or things of this nature where you can go and see and read some of the history and things that you choose to do. I have no problem with them doing that. I would expect it. But there's been a very big critical complaint inside the city of Chicago, specifically South Side Chicago. Well, in his statement that everything's ready to go and we're anxious to start, Obama tried to explain why they were going to want to put it in Jackson Park.
From the beginning, Michelle and I knew there was only one place for the Obama Presidential Center, the South Side of Chicago. It's where I met Michelle, just a couple of miles from where she grew up, where Sasha and Malia were born, where I became a community organizer and won my first election.
So he has personal and family ties to that area. Jackson Park is a 540-acre recreational area. They're going to take just under 20 acres for the presidential Obama library, or whatever they're calling it, presidential center is what they're actually calling it. Jackson Park is on the National Register of Historic Places. It was the site of an 1893 Columbian exposition. And so many of those, such as the organization Protect Our Parks, has been opposing the project. They had a lawsuit back in May 2018, and now they're going to look at filing new lawsuits, trying to keep it from being built there. Now they're looking at, quote, protecting our parks and the natural historical reference of Jackson Park. Obama's still saying that there are benefits that do not exist there that my presidential center will bring.
The center will create jobs and economic opportunity, especially for Southside residents, because we believe the team that's building the center should look like the community it calls home. And through the museum, the center will be a place to honor history while inspiring young people to write chapters of their own, giving them the tools, resources, and connections they need to create change in their own community.
And that all sounds good. But let me read you something from the Associated Press. This piece originally was published in August of 2019. I'm going to read a section of it to you from the Associated Press. When Dateline, Chicago, when word spread that the Obama Presidential Center was coming to the lakefront park, Tara Madison has watched through her apartment windows for a decade. She was elated at the idea of a gleaming facility honoring the president she supported and reviving rough sections of her neighborhood. Then the 52-year-old social services worker and daughter of civil rights activists began to worry that luxury condos might replace subsidized housing, including where she lives with her two children and two grandchildren, and she'll be forced to move. Her quote, because our area has become attractive to developers now, they will count us out. The Associated Press adds that her sentiments represent a tangled conflict that's unfolded since Barack Obama announced his $500 million presidential center would be built in Jackson Park near Lake Michigan. Could the legacy of the nation's first black president propel displacement of thousands of low-income black families right in his backyard? And again, this is written in the summer of 19. And according to the AP, with construction looming and signs the neighborhood is already changing, residents are fiercely seeking safeguards for the place they also call home. The clash was a catalyst for one activist to become an alderwoman and led to a ballot question gauging support and a resident protections ordinance that would go before city council at some point. It doesn't say, I haven't seen the update on it because, again, it was written back in 19. But the key is added here. Fear of gentrification and the racial disparities that often come with it has existed for decades in Woodlawn and other Southside Chicago neighborhoods slow to recover from the recession. Woodlawn, 10 miles from downtown, steps from Jackson Park, over 80% black, nearly 40% of its 25,000 residents living below the poverty line. And there's spillover from neighboring Hyde Park, home to the University of Chicago, where only 30% of the residents are black, 23% are poor. And again, it wasn't surprising that the Obama Foundation chose the area in 2016. And Chicago beat out several cities, including Honolulu, where Obama spent his early years. There are a lot of activists that have not been happy with it. They have not been happy with Obama in general, quite honestly. Since he left, they don't think he did enough for them when he was in office, has done nothing for them since then. And the Associated Press pointed that out. Quoting one of the activists, Jeanette Taylor, saying, he forgot the people who got him into office. But again, he sees that this presidential center does have and will bring more support for the community.
Getting to this point wouldn't have been possible without the folks in the community who have been a part of this process along the way. Michelle and I want to thank you for making this project even better. A space for the community, built in partnership with the community. We know that by working together, we can unlock the South Side's fullest potential and help set up our city, our country, and our world for even better years still to come.
Well, but the fight is not over. Those who are fighting for to preserve our parks are involved. Some of the residents of South Side are involved. Or they want protections, at least. They've been pushing for an ordinance calling for protections in a two-mile radius around the presidential center and including designating 30% of the area's housing as affordable, requiring buildings up for sale to first be offered to current tenants, establishing a community trust fund to help residents with property taxes. One of the activists says it's morally wrong to get investment in a community that's long overdue investment than to displace the very people who've been dealing with disinvestment. It's a conversation should have been had way before this library. That's her statement. The Obama Foundation not taking an official position on that approach. It will probably be built, and it may or may not lead to some of the things that some of the Southside residents fear. My hope for the city and those residents and the fact that it's supposed to be an honor and recognition of a former president, I hope it all goes well. I do. But it's for the folks of Chicago. It's their decision as much as it is anyone else's. You do have to ask, was there not some other place you could have done it without having? Yeah, but Obama wanted here, and he explains why. It's where he met Michelle, and the girls were born there, so you can understand their connection to the area. But for someone who told everybody to hope, there are a lot in Chicago right now that have no hope of stopping it and what it may do to them in the end. John Kerry, of course, says, I have a reason to have a jet. You don't. Well, I want to look at that issue again, because in the process, there's some other questions. And I told you I will say something absolutely politically incorrect. I'm warning you again.
Podcast of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Just take those old records off the shelf. I sit and listen to them by myself. Today's music ain't got the same soul. I like that old time of rock and roll. Don't try to take me to a disco.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So the other day, we ran a clip on John Kerry being questioned as he arrived in Iceland to receive an environmental award in the shape of an iceberg because he flew in his private jet. And a member of the press, I believe a Norwegian member at that point, raised the question that, is it proper for you to fly in here on a jet to accept a climate award? I mean, a private jet that his plane supposedly releases 40 to 60 times as much carbon footprint as a standard passenger jet would? It does raise a question, doesn't it? So, again, the question and John Kerry's response.
If you offset your carbon, it's the only choice for somebody like me who is traveling the world to win this battle. I negotiated the Paris Accords for the United States, I've been involved in this fight for years. I negotiated with President Xi to bring President Xi to the table so we could get Paris. And I believe the time it takes me to get somewhere, I can't sail across the ocean. I have to fly to meet with people and get things done. But what I'm doing almost full time is working to win the battle of climate change. And in the end, if I offset and contribute my life to do this, I'm not going to be put on the defensive.
So there, I'm not going to be put on the defensive. I'll fly my private jet because a person like me, his words, like me, not saying doing the job I'm trying to do, a person like me, I can't sail across the ocean. I need to use the jet. It reminds me when I did the interview with Barack Obama when he was in the White House. And one of the questions I pointed out to him at that time, 2012, we were still coming out of the 08 recession and having a difficult time. And I said, you know, a lot of people, they see they have a hard time. They can't even take their kids to an amusement park, and it's tough for them. He nodded, yes, yes, I agree, yeah. And I said, so then they see you and the first family jetting all over the world under color of state business, and they think you're out of touch. Well, after he looked back at me from backing his head away, he said, well, I had to fly on Air Force One, which wasn't my question. Same here, question for John Kerry was, why a private jet? And he went on talking about, I can't sail the ocean. Well, I didn't want Obama to be on a public plane. I want him in a secure situation. The point was, are you abusing it and treating the family to a lot of special treats because you can, and Americans are struggling? You're out of touch. So for Kerry here, he says, I'm not going to be held accountable. I mean, I'm not going to be defensive for this. This is what I have to do. And there's been a question raised, well, do they have more than just, don't they have many houses? Yeah, well, there's apparently, the question went to Snopes, you know, the one that supposedly checks facts like that, and says, yes, they do. They have owned, there are still on at least four, maybe five homes, a dozen cars, two yachts, a jet. But then they also point out, well, Kerry signed, when he married the heiress to the Heinz ketchup, he had to sign a prenup agreement. So you can't really say he owns them. I wonder if she reminds him of that. Hey, I own that jet. Don't say it's your jet. Just wondering. So NASA announcing the other day that by 2024, we hope to have two Americans once again on the moon. That'd be pretty exciting, wouldn't it? That we would do that. And we have female astronauts as well. One of them is named, let me get the names here, Kayla. She was a lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy at one point. Another woman, Christina, master's degree in electrical engineering. She holds a record, by the way, for the longest single space flight by a woman. Six spacewalks. Let me see, another woman, Nicole, F-18 fighter pilot, Anna, bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering, helicopter test pilot, Jessica, marine biology, Kate, first to sequence DNA in space, already performing a couple spacewalks, Jessica, serving as a member of the Mars Science Lab. Stephanie had at one point been involved in Galileo spacecraft. So one of them will also be on board that. We're sending a man and a woman. Don't know which one. And here's where I'm going off the track. We couldn't get someone named Alice. We couldn't get someone named Alice or say, to the moon, Alice. To the moon, Alice. Do you remember, some of you, the honeymooners and the remarks of the remarks of Ralph Cramden to Alice? More Alice to the moon. Well, that's politically incorrect nowadays, Larry. It's not even worth being funny. Okay. Thanks for joining us. do remember our pledge, one nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.